Good afternoon, everybody, or good morning, or good evening, or good night, wherever you're listening in for Sports Betting Tips with Chris Sheridan, episode 31, and we're talking today with Pacers play-by-play announcer Mark Boyle about the faltering Indiana Pacers, who had just lost two and should have beat. Cleveland was one of them, and then Toronto, they were up big and blew a big fourth quarter lead, and now they're coming into Brooklyn, and I'll be at the game tomorrow night to play the hottest team in the NBA. You don't expect to hear that associated with the Brooklyn Nets, but they won in Chicago last night, and they're going to take a seven-game winning streak into what will be a pretty big home game for them. So, Mark, welcome to the show, and let's get right at it. Indiana is at 20-12. They're only 3.5 games back in the East, but if the ball had bounced a little differently in a couple of those games, they'd be a half game out. They're going up against a Brooklyn Nets team that, again, has won seven in a row and is on the outside looking in, but is not that far out of playoff contention or, you know, being involved in the playoffs in the Eastern Conference. Let's start with your team first. What's wrong with the Pacers these last couple of nights?
Well, 20-12 isn't bad, and if by faltering you've lost two in a row, I guess you're doing okay. The last two, though, have not been their finest hours. Shorthanded in both situations, Cleveland was missing a bunch of guys, and they're bad to begin with, and Toronto was missing Lowry and Valanciunas and Ibaka, and the Pacers had them down 13 with 10 minutes to go. So, Chris, like you said, two very winnable games that could have and perhaps should have been won. But in both cases, they went down to the last possession. Cleveland got a tip in from Nance as time expired to win by one, and then the Pacers couldn't get a three off when they were down three on their last possession in Toronto last night. So close but no cigar, and it's kind of interesting to compare and contrast because they were really, really in these situations last year. Games decided by three or less, they were 11-2, which is terrific. It was the best in the league. And this year now they're 2-3 with essentially the same group of guys. So it doesn't seem to me like there's any great problem there. They missed a couple of opportunities, but they've generally been playing pretty well. They'd won seven in a row before that. So I think all things considered, they're in a pretty good spot.
Yeah, when I do this show and when I talk to guys at arenas around the NBA, there's one recurring theme, and they're like, everybody's got to keep their eye on the Indiana Pacers. This is a team that nobody talks about. But this is a team that is bringing back basically the same roster they had last year. Lance Stephenson was really the only guy who left. And Indiana, for some reason, has Philadelphia's number. They play Indiana real well. Haven't played Boston yet this year. But when you start talking about teams that can come out of the East, Mark, make a case that Indiana is that team.
Well, you could make that case because there's no real powerhouse in the East. Toronto looks good. We know Boston has a good roster. But neither one of those appears invincible. So if you're Indiana or Milwaukee or Philadelphia, I think you can legitimately think that you have a chance to get out. And in the Pacers' case, probably the one thing that looks daunting is that they just can't beat Toronto. They've lost 10 straight games in Canada and generally haven't fared very well against the Raptors. So that's something that might come into play later. They haven't played Boston yet this season. They've split with Milwaukee, and they split with Philadelphia. They're not a team without a weakness, far from it, but they're pretty solid in every area, and they're really good defensively. They've become a decent rebounding team, which was an issue for them in the past. Their bench is good. They've been in the top five in point differential off the bench all season long. So you look up and down the roster, and you look at the analytics and the statistics, and nothing jumps out in terms of, boy, they're really lacking in this area or that. So that's the positive, and you could use that to make a case that maybe they could get out of the East. On the other hand, unlike some of these other teams we're talking about, they do have an all-star caliber player in Bo, but they don't have the one guy that you look at and say, boy, he's a top X NBA player. And in Oladipo's case, as good as he is, sometimes down the stretch in games, he becomes a little bit myopic, and we saw that last night in Toronto. He made a bunch of errors, including an eight-second call in the backcourt when he wasn't even pressured. Drove the ball into three guys and got tied up on a jump ball in the second-to-last possession of the night. Turned the ball over six times. He becomes a little bit, not self-centered because he's a willing passer, but I think his confidence is such that when the game is on the line, he thinks he needs to do it himself, and he has done it himself on more than one occasion. So there's reason for him to think that way. But they tend to get a little bogged down the stretch in some of these games where it's Oladipo against the world, and I think that might be a problem later on.
Yeah, and look, it's 5 days before Christmas, and a lot of teams you'll see sort of going through the motions right now. Especially when you're on the road, your family's back home, and you're just playing, you're getting through the 82, and these last two were 2 of 82, and again, what happens in December usually doesn't reflect on what the team is going to look like in April and May and June when the playoffs start rolling around. And when you look back at last year's playoffs, Mark, what kind of sticks in your mind as the defining moment for the Pacers, aside from their Game 7 sort of meltdown?
Well, I don't know that there was a defining moment. With this franchise, over the last several years, they've had some opportunities, not with this roster. This roster is really only in its second year. But you go back as recently as 5 or 6 years, and they had chances against Miami when they had the Paul George-centric teams. They took Miami to 7 once. They took them to 6 another time. And for them, the continuing theme is this. When they lose in the playoffs, with the exception of the Toronto series in 2016, which they lost in 7 games, other than that, when they lose in the playoffs, it's because the opponent has LeBron James and they don't. James beat the Pacers several times in Miami. He beat them the last 2 years in Cleveland. And it's really frustrating if you're on the other side of that equation, because you think, and you, I think with some justification can believe this without deluding yourself, you look at your roster and you think, well, we're better than them. But they've got the one guy that you, or nobody else for that matter, has any answer for. And it's continually frustrating to lose to the same guy, and he's wearing two different uniforms, and the circumstances are different, and you just can't get past it. That's not a defining moment, but that to me is the defining theme of the last several years for the Pacers. They've confronted LeBron James in the playoffs, took him to 7 twice, but they just have not been able to get past him. And it's difficult to say what might have happened had they been able to get past him, but I can guarantee you they would have liked to find out.
Yeah, well, they're not alone. A lot of teams have gone up against LeBron James in a Game 7, and then they keep the game tight, and then it comes down to the final 6 minutes, and the guy just takes over games. He's done it 8 straight years to get his teams to the finals. Look at the Motley Crue he took to the finals last year in Cleveland, and that's why I tell people, don't count the Lakers out. Just don't count them out. They're going to turn over a significant portion of their roster by the time March 1st rolls around. Guys that are there now are not going to be there on March 1st when it's time to have your playoff roster set. I just got some intel that Leon Rose, who's Carmelo Anthony's agent, is on a plane right now from Teterboro going out to LAX. That could be a sign that Carmelo Anthony's about to join that team. And, the Lakers and LeBron James are going to be interesting, and they're going to drive traffic, and they're going to drive interest in the NBA. And that's going to be the case in point for the next 4 years. But in the meantime, we got a lot of other markets out there, including the New York market, where both teams are sort of in tank mode, but the Nets kind of aren't. Mark, the Nets have won 7 in a row, and they've looked damn good. I covered the game against the Lakers the other night, and they did a nice job on LeBron James. As you look ahead to Friday night in Brooklyn, and you look at that roster, who are the guys who are going to give the Pacers trouble? Obviously, D'Angelo Russell can give anybody trouble, and Spencer Dinwiddie might be the sixth man of the year candidate, the leading sixth man of the year candidate. But the rest of the roster isn't going to bowl you over. And when you get the Nets-Pacers game, and you say, man, how does this team win 7 in a row? What are some of the things that you're keying on?
Well, I think one of the reasons they don't bowl you over is because a lot of their talent is young and not known to the masses. I think it is known to the people that follow the league closely. And although I don't think anyone thought you'd look at Brooklyn at the start of the season and see them at some point winning 7 straight, I don't think it was outside the bounds of rationale to think that they might be improving. They're not the Knicks. They're not in a perennial ditch trying to get out. They've done some nice things with their roster. They appear to have a plan in place. And they've won these 7 games, it should be noted, without Caris LeVert, who was their leading scorer before he went down. And Dinwiddie's been terrific. Sixth man of the year, maybe most improved player too. That's how good he's been. And then D'Angelo Russell finally seems to have figured it out. after some missteps early in his career. Jared Allen's a really nice player who is sort of unknown by the masses. Rondae Hollis Jefferson's a good player. The point I make here, Chris, is this. They might not be known in that they don't have the marquee names, but they're obviously getting better. They're at the very least a playoff a contender for one of those final playoff spots in the East, and they seem to be getting better as time goes on. I think they're one of the more interesting young teams in the league.
They are, and they've developed a bit of chemistry. And you talk about Jared Allen. Jared Allen blocked a dunk attempt by LeBron James the other night. And ESPN put out a really nice stat. It was only the eighth time in his career that LeBron James has had a dunk blocked.
I'm surprised it was the eighth time. I would have thought it was the second or third time.
You know, not that many guys can block the guy's dunks.
No.
You know, he's a freight train, but Jared did it, and the place went nuts. And he's a nice young player, and Sean Marks loves him. I think Sean Marks probably might have had a shot at Jimmy Butler during the preseason when Butler was holding out. They could have done something along the lines of D'Angelo Russell. D'Angelo Russell is very tight with Karl Anthony Towns and Rondae Hollis Jefferson and Jared Allen. And Jared Allen was really the non-starter. Sean Marks loves him and thinks he's going to be a dominant center in this league. He's really got the best afro in the league at this point. And that doesn't really count for much, except the fans out there do dig him. And the Brooklyn Nets are an interesting team. They're a lot more fun to watch right now than the team across town, the New York Knicks. But let's turn it back to your team, the Pacers. And again, chemistry counts, Mark. Chemistry counts, and this is a team that has basically the same roster that they had last year. So tell me how they're better than they were last year and how they're not as good as they were last year.
Well, there are a couple of areas where they're not doing quite as well, and they were really good in turnover differential last year. They barely turned it over themselves, and while they didn't force a huge number of turnovers, the difference was notable. When you compare theirs versus opponents. Now, they're not bad this year, but they're not near the top like they were last year. That's an area where they've not been quite as good. They've been hit and miss at the foul line. They were in the top third in the league last year. They're in the bottom third this year. And in the last two games, that's particularly come into play. They lost to Cleveland by one, and they lost to Brooklyn by three, and they shot under 70% from the line in both of those games. So they've been a little bit erratic there. Their depth is better. I mentioned earlier that their bench has been pretty productive. Point differential there has been in the top five in the league all year long. And they've added some players that really have fit in. Doug McDermott has given them another three-point threat. Early in the season, they had a little bit of difficulty finding him shots, but they're doing a little bit better job of that now. They added Tyreek Evans, who's been a little bit up and down, but is a talented player who they think will ultimately have an opportunity to be an impact player. He's in the rotation right now, but struggling a little bit. They like the rookie Aaron Holiday, who played very well when Victor Oladipo went down. And that's another thing, Chris, about their depth. When Oladipo missed time last year, they were unable to win, and that's literal. He missed seven games, and they went 0-7. He's missed 11 games this year, and they went 7-4 without him. So that's another indication that they're deeper. They're a little bit more used to playing with one another after having had a whole year together. And when you look at that 20-12 record and you see that your best players missed 11 of those 32 games, then that makes the 20-12, I think, look a little bit more impressive. So overall, they're just a little bit better rounded. They're a little bit deeper. They essentially play the same way. Their pace is not fast. They haven't succumbed yet to the modern NBA. They're near the bottom in three-pointers attempted. They're in the bottom five or so in pace. So relative to today's game, they're playing sort of an old-school game, but it suits their personnel well, and they've been pretty effective.
Yeah, their big measuring stick game, I think, is not going to come until Wednesday, January 9th, when they're at Boston. You're in a long stretch of games against Eastern Conference teams, Mark, and it's time to fatten up. You got Washington and Atlanta twice in three of the next four games, and you're at Chicago, and then the road trip. That's a five-game road trip that includes stops at Toronto and at Boston, and ends up here at the Garden against the Knicks. And as you said, they haven't had a lot of luck against Toronto, but you got to measure yourself against Boston. And when we talk about the Boston Celtics, there's a lot of talk about Anthony Davis. Anthony Davis is going to end up somewhere at some point, and it's not going to be New Orleans. And when you look at what Danny Ainge can give up in order to get his hands on Anthony Davis, a player he's craved. And then when you look at what the Lakers could give up to get Anthony Davis, who's with Rich Paul and Clutch Sports, they represent LeBron James. Who do you make the favorite in that race, the race to acquire Anthony Davis in a trade?
Well, that's really hard to say because those are two prominent contenders. Maybe somebody else will emerge. And we've also always, I think, got to consider this possibility. I don't speak specifically about Davis, but just, Chris, about the climate in general. You'll remember this time last year, everybody was going to the Los Angeles Lakers and would never stay in Oklahoma City. Well, where is he now? He's still in Oklahoma City. So until the guy leaves where he is, I'm not going to consider it a foregone conclusion that he does leave. But if he does, who has the resources to get him? What does New Orleans want in return? What's their position of strength in terms of being able to negotiate? And all of the things that go into what oftentimes is a pretty complicated scenario. So you would look at teams like you mentioned. Ainge is well known to be a gambler and a very savvy trader. So you always have to consider Boston, particularly with the assets they have. Los Angeles is attractive. They have assets that they can give up. So you list those two teams, but I would never rule out the possibility of a guy staying where he is. And then who knows who might emerge in addition to, say, the Lakers and the Celtics. What I'm getting at is this. It's fun to talk about, I think, but it's still probably a little bit too early to offer any kind of a reasonable prognosis. It's a fun situation to watch, though, for sure.
Yeah, and it's what people around the league love talking about is the possibility of superstars joining up and creating super teams. And the Clippers are following the Raptors on the road every single game. The Clippers got somebody there because they want Kevin Durant on that team. As far as Anthony Davis goes, if the Pelicans can't put together a championship-worthy roster around him, Danny Ainge has 4 first-round draft picks in the next draft, and he's got a lot of young talent. I don't think he'd give up Jason Tatum, but I think he'd give up Jaylen Brown. And then if he's going to make an in-season trade, he's got to get rid of Kyrie Irving because there's a rule that says you can't have Kyrie and Anthony Davis on the same team. It's sort of like the Rose rule, but it's not the Rose rule. They can have those two guys on the same team over the summer, but Danny wants to win now. And if he can work out some sort of a three-way where Kyrie ends up in a city where he's going to be happy, he can put Terry Rozier in as the starting point guard, and he can throw all 4 of his first-round picks in. And then wherever Kyrie ends up, someone's going to have to pay for him. And you can look at a scenario where New Orleans can come away with maybe 2-3 starters and 5 or 6 draft picks. That's enough to rebuild around. And if Anthony Davis wants to finish his career or move on to the next stage of his career in a bigger market, there are forces at play, especially with Clutch Sports, that can make that happen. Would you agree?
I would agree with that in theory. Because I think everything you say is true, although I would qualify those 4 first-round draft picks. I'm not as familiar with these things as you are, but certainly some of those are Boston's own picks, and those are going to be near the end of the first round, so they're not as appealing as a first-round pick sounds on the surface. That said, they're still assets, and all of the things that you talked about that I think fans sometimes don't take into account, like who the agent is and what the relationship with the agent and his, in the case we're talking about here, James and Rich Paul, and how all of that ties together. I've been in the league 31 years now, Chris, and the league is much more fraternal than it used to be. Back in the day when I came in 88, the mindset was entirely opposite. And we had Larry Bird in Indiana running the franchise, and he's commented on it in the past. And I think, although this is a little simplistic, and I don't mean to speak for Larry here, something he said years ago was definitely true back in the day, and it's this. We weren't figuring out how to join with each other. We were trying to figure out how to beat each other. The mentality is different. You know, I think for the average fan, it's made the league a lot more interesting. It's certainly more fluid with players changing teams far more frequently, particularly elite players. And now going back to when Miami put their team together with James and Wade and Bosch, that's become sort of a blueprint for teams as they try to, you know, join forces with 2 or 3 elite players. And Boston does have the resources to get a lot of stuff done, and they have the mindset with Ainge to do it. They've never shown any reluctance to take chances on things. That's a really interesting franchise with a lot of assets. So I guess if we were going to handicap things now based on what we know, certainly they'd be at the front of the list, along with the Lakers. And maybe this is just me being naive, but just like the Paul George scenario last year, and I already mentioned this, I'm not assuming a guy's gone until he is gone, because nobody thought George was staying in Oklahoma.
Yeah, everybody was saying that right up until June 30th last year, and then all of a sudden he was having a barbecue out in the middle of Oklahoma, and he was in L.A. on the 29th, and then on the 30th he was out in Oklahoma having a barbecue to celebrate staying with Oklahoma City. So Sam Presti's gamble paid off, but that also paid off well for Kevin Pritchard in Indiana, because he got two really good players back. But getting back to Boston's picks, you're right. Some of the picks aren't great. Boston's own pick is going to be in the 20s. Boston also owns an LA Clippers first round pick for this year. It's protected 1-14 this year and next year. Boston has Memphis's first round pick this year. That's protected 1-8 in 2019 and 1-6 in 2020. Then it becomes unprotected. That's kind of a valuable pick. And then they have Philly's pick as well. So, and Philly's pick is going to be in the 20s. So you're right. Four first-round picks, three of them are going to be in the 20s, but that Memphis pick is the interesting one. But let's turn to some odds, because this show is about sports betting. And it's worth mentioning that this show lives on getmoresports.com, but the guys paying the bills are one of the best sports books in the world, BetDSI.com. It's out of San Jose, Costa Rica. And if you go to BetDSI.com, or if you're listening overseas, if you go to BetDSI.eu and you enter bonus code BBALL1000, all capital letters BBALL1000, they'll match your first $1,000 or first thousand, whatever the local currency equivalent is, $1,000. They'll match it, and then you have $2,000 to play with. And when I look at the board, Mark, the first thing I want to say is, how about this? The Indiana Pacers are 55-1 to win the NBA championship. 55-1. Is that a fair number?
Off the top of my head, 55-1. Yeah, that seems about right. They're obviously not a favorite, as 55-1 would indicate, but it's not inconceivable to imagine them in the finals. And if you get to the finals, then who knows what can happen. So I'd have to look at the big list and see where does 55-1 play in terms of how many teams are considered better odds than the Pacers. And then that would put it into more context. But off the top of my head, 55-1 doesn't seem unfair, no.
Yeah, well, when you go down the Eastern Conference, the Celtics are 9-1. The 76ers are 14-1. Raptors right now are the favorites at 7-1. The Bucks are 18-1. And, there's good odds on some good teams. The Denver Nuggets atop the Western Conference are at 30-1.
The one that jumped out at me there is this. If 55 is fair for Indiana, I think 14-1 is a little out of line for Philadelphia. I'm not big on Philadelphia. I want to see how this Butler thing plays out. He's had some issues where he's been before, particularly with some of his younger teammates. We'll see how it goes with he and Embiid and Simmons. So far, going very well, by the way. They've won a high percentage of their games since move. Fluid and a team to a degree, at least in transition. They've never really had any success in the playoffs. I don't gamble because, I know I would lose. I'm an idiot. But if I did, I would bet Indiana 55-1 before I bet Philadelphia 14-1.
Well, as we all know, Indiana has Philadelphia's number. Brooklyn, the same way. The Sixers just can't play with those two teams. And you're right about everything you said about Butler is right. And they're still, those guys are still getting used to each other. And Joel Embiid is not all that happy with kind of his reduced role in the offense. But look, the guys are midseason acquisition. And it takes 40 games to get it to develop a certain level of chemistry. And but that being said, Philly's still missing a shooter. They miss Bellinelli an awful lot. And at the power forward position, the jury's out on Moose, Mike Muscala, whether that guy's going to be, a short-term solution or a long-term solution. But Philly's sitting pretty with an open roster spot, and they can wait. There's no rush. They can do what Brian Colangelo did last year. They can wait till trade deadline comes and goes, and then they can shop the buyout market. They can also shop the guys coming back from China. There's a lot of Americans over there making a lot of noise in China who have just priced themselves out of the NBA. So, again, we're 5 days before Christmas, and there's a lot of basketball left to be played. And what rosters look like in December is often not what they look like in March. And that's when you really got to look at it. What's the team look like in March? But, Mark, let's turn it over to MVP odds. And right now the favorite at 2-1 is Giannis Antetokounmpo of the Milwaukee Bucks. And I think he's a worthy favorite at that number. Some of the outliers, James Harden's at 9-1, Kevin Durant's at 13-1. The guy who I put $10 on at 100-1 in the preseason, Nikola Jokic, I saw Charles Barkley on ESPN saying, the Joker is the MVP. The Joker is MVP right now in the league, and he's still on the board at 60-1. You agree with what Sir Charles had to say?
You could make that case. I don't buy that as an outright statement, but I think this 100-1 is a fantastic bet. It's that too, because this guy's a really good player, and he's sort of like he's not like Jared Allen. But I'm going to make the same point I made when we were talking about Jared Allen earlier, because Denver's not had a lot of success. Unlike Brooklyn, they're in the Mountain Time Zone, so they don't play a lot of high-profile games in the Eastern Time Zone. There's a lot of people who are only vaguely aware of who Nikola Jokic is, and he's a terrific player. Any team would jump at the chance to have him, and I think he's probably a top-10 player in the league, and he's certainly having an MVP-worthy caliber season. But to say it in such a definitive manner, I wouldn't go that far, because there are a lot of guys doing, well, not a lot, but there are a few guys who belong in that conversation. To a degree, the Antetokounmpo odds, or whether or not he wins the MVP, I think will be tied more or less directly to how well Milwaukee does. And they're good, but since starting 7-0, they haven't been great. They've been pretty good. So let's say they won the division with 52 wins. Is that enough to get in the MVP, assuming he continues to play at the same level? Maybe. Harden's exploded again here lately. What if Houston starts winning? I don't think they're going to win regularly, because I think they have some issues that have yet to be resolved. But they're going to be a playoff team, and if he starts putting up huge numbers, then he's in the conversation, particularly in light of the fact that he won last year. And there are other players as the season evolves. What if Curry stays healthy and Golden State starts winning 85% of its games and he puts up huge numbers? The point I'm making is one of the reasons these are fun things to talk about 30-plus games into the season, Chris, is because we're not even halfway through the season. And we don't know how this is going to evolve, who's going to get hurt, what team is going to catch fire, what player might continue to do well as his team prospers. There's a lot of variables here that we can only speculate on, which I guess is what wagering is all about. But I like Jokic, but no, I would not consider him the MVP at this time.
Yeah, I'll take my $10 bet that's sitting out there, and you know, if it hits, I got $1,000, and that's yes, why I make small bets. But the guy's a fantastic player. I love watching this guy play. He's the only point center in the league. He's a great, great, great passer, great ball handler. And look, if the Denver Nuggets finish atop the Western Conference, he's going to get serious consideration. But the other point that you made, Mark, and again, we're on with Mark Boyle of the Indiana Pacers broadcast team, is that Denver doesn't get a lot of publicity. Nobody's watching this guy because it's just not a sexy team. Everybody's concentrating on the sexy teams. But sometimes somebody jumps from the pack, and at the end of 82, you say, you know what? I never would have guessed, but I'm going to vote for Nikola Jokic for MVP. You know, it's not without beyond the realm of possibility. So I just want to look at a couple other things that are on the board right now. And one is Rookie of the Year. And Luka Doncic he's at minus 667, which means you got to bet $667 to win 100. And that's how good of a player he's been for the Dallas Mavericks. DeAndre Ayton is at 6-1, but he's playing for a horrible team. Same thing with Trae Young. He's at 11-1 on a horrible team. Colin Sexton's at 15-1 on a horrible team. You just saw Colin a couple nights ago. Can anybody catch Luka Doncic? Let's assume that he stays healthy. Can anyone catch him?
Well, that's not the only thing. Let's assume that he stays healthy, and let's assume that Dallas continues to impress. They've really been pretty good. Now, they're not great in terms of an overall winning percentage. They're right around 500, but that's a big jump from where they have been, and he's a big part of it. We haven't seen Dallas, but I have seen the other guys that you mentioned. Sexton has scored really well since moving into the starting lineup. We saw Cleveland early when he was coming off the bench, and now he's starting, and he's done pretty well. Trae Young is still trying to not only figure out the NBA, but figure out what to do when you've got the ball in your hands all the time and you're on a bad team. Those are not easy lessons to learn, and he's done very well learning them. So there are some guys that might, as the season goes along, continue to evolve, continue to improve. But really, it's difficult for me to imagine, because the guys we're talking about are on bad teams, except for Doncic. And he's on a team that, at the very least, is competitive, and he's a big part of it. He's a big reason for their improvement. I would consider him to be a prohibitive favorite for that award, unless something changes. And I'm really looking forward to seeing him, because he's one of the guys we haven't seen yet.
Yeah, he's, you know, they're putting, my editor sent me a tape of something that they're playing on the scoreboard in Dallas, where it's this sort of ode to Luka, and it's not the best thing that the Dallas Mavericks have ever put on their scoreboard, but then again, they've put some great stuff on their scoreboard. So, again, we're going to start to wrap up, Mark, but I want to just kind of hit you with a couple of really broad questions. Biggest surprise team in the entire NBA this year, whether good or bad?
For me, it's an obvious one, and it's Washington. I just can't figure it out. We've seen them, and we'll see them again this Sunday. We saw them about a week or so ago. It's not that they're loaded with talent, but they certainly have enough talent that they shouldn't be 12 and 20. And they're great one night, and they're giving up 140 the next. It's perplexing to me. They're the biggest surprise, because I certainly didn't consider them to be a championship contender, but the talent on that roster does not suggest a team that is likely to be the most long.
Yeah, they're
lottery team. I don't get it.
Yeah, and well, people are trying to pick the low-hanging fruit there, and that's why Bradley Beal's a big name on the trade market right now, because teams think they can get him. From what I'm told, the powers that be in Washington said, let's just stick with it, man. Let's get to game 42, which is only 10 away, and then let's see where we are. Then we'll reassess. John Wall's a tough guy to trade because he's got a 15% trade kicker, but that being said, he's a heck of a point guard. And they did make a nice trade picking up Ariza. He's done good things for them before, and they're in a weak conference. There's no other way to put it. They're in a weak conference. But you're right. They're the biggest underachieving team in the NBA. And as far as positives go, certainly Denver sitting atop the West has got everybody kind of bent out of shape. But what about another team that's really overperforming?
Well, I'm not surprised about Denver. I am surprised they're at the top, but it's not because I didn't think they'd be good. I did think they'd be good, but I thought Golden State would have a much better record. We didn't foresee the injuries to Curry and Green and the drama that went on early in the season and so forth. So not too surprised about Denver. I was surprised about the Clippers early, but now it seems like they're starting to move back to earth a little bit. So keep an eye on them. But the other teams, and this is not a great team, and they're struggling to play around 500, but I thought Memphis might be really bad. You know, they were bad last year, but part of that was the Conley injury. We saw them on opening night, and they looked horrible. I didn't think they'd be a bottom feeder, but I they're more competitive than I thought, and that's not a sexy choice because they're not a really good team, but I thought they were going to be a bad team, so they've surprised me a little bit. Dallas has been a little bit of a surprise to me. I didn't know how good Doncic was. You know his name, but I've never seen him play. How many rookies we've seen come into this league highly touted and wound up being less than advertised? Dallas hasn't been good for a couple of years. And so they've been a little surprise to me, too. But there's nobody at the top of the pile that I look at and say, wow, they're really good, and I didn't think they would be. I thought Denver would be good. I thought Milwaukee would be good. The obvious ones that we know would be good are Toronto and Boston and Golden State. Oklahoma City's been good after a slow start. So I would say if I were boiling down to one sentence, Chris, I would say that Washington has been my biggest surprise on the negative side. And maybe Dallas on the positive side, even though their record isn't great.
Yeah, I can't disagree with any of that, but I especially agree with Memphis. Until they lost four in a row, they were at 16-11, and they were the biggest surprise in the Western Conference outside of Denver. And I want to wrap it, Mark, just by talking about sports gambling in general, because it's become legal in America, and it's becoming mainstream. The Action Network is doing some fantastic things. You see so much of the content on ESPN and on CBS Sports and on other big gambling sites now they point it toward the gambling market. What's it like in Indiana as far as acceptance of gambling as now a mainstream activity?
It's not really talked about much, and I think that's typical of any change. The further you move to the middle of the country, I think the slower it takes for things to catch on, whereas if you go to the East Coast or the West Coast, things seem to change at a more rapid pace, particularly the East Coast. So when you get to Middle America, which is where Indiana is, some of these things that are becoming really prevalent elsewhere are starting to become discussed. You know, we have things like horse racing and off-track betting and all of that, but sports betting, or at least what I would define as sports betting in the mainstream fans' mind, the NFL or the NBA or so forth, it's coming, and it's coming rapidly. But generally speaking, these things come a little more slowly to the Midwest than they come to the rest of the country. So every once in a while you hear somebody talking about it, but it's not the rage that it is in some other places.
Mm. He's Mark Boyle. You can listen to him on 107.5 or 1070 The Fan. If you're a Pacer fan, you already know that, and if you're not a Pacer fan, it's still a damn good team to watch, and they're a sleeper team. And Mark does the games and does a terrific job with Flick Leonard and works for a real class organization with the best PR guy in the NBA in David Benner. Mark, I want to thank you for for coming on the show. I'll see you out there tomorrow night in Brooklyn. And with that, I want to put in one more plug. Again, this show lives on GetMoreSports.com, but the guys paying the bills are out of Costa Rica. They're one of the top offshore books in the world. It's BetDSI.com, and if you go there and you put in the bonus code BBALL1000 in all capital letters, you're going to get $1,000 of free money. Go out and have some fun with that free money like I did with my $10 Nikola Jokic bet. So with that, Mark, anything you want to plug?
No, not really. I enjoyed being on the show, though, and anytime you need me, you know where to find me.
Yeah, and I'm going to try to plug that thing we talked about off the air. So with that, we're going to wrap it up. So Merry Christmas to everybody around the world. And if you're listening and you're not a Christian, and then a belated happy Hanukkah to you, and or Kwanzaa or whatever you want to celebrate, or Festivus. There's always Festivus for the rest of us. It's still the greatest episode ever. With that, we're going to close it up. And we go over and...